Welcome to the 83rd episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name's Kaylin Egan.
My name is Travis Sintel.
I apologize for my congested voice.
Don't apologize, because when you're sick, you reveal yourself, and people love that.
I'm not sick like that.
You're not emotionally available.
I'm sick like mad.
Oh, great.
Like, I don't like it.
Great. I'm sorry you're sick, but I'm not, truthfully, the sickness
is just a front. I'm on the out. It's going away.
Guys, he's fine. No apologies.
I'm fine.
No excuses.
I'm fine. I'm energized. I'm ready. I'm excited.
We have a big day, actually.
Feel really good.
We have a,
field trip day.
DYFM suck field trip.
It's our first trip out of the garage.
What are we, Mark Maron? Yeah, this is great. No, I'm excited to go see this.
Why haven't we done this? This has been an opportunity. We've had this chance in the past, and we've always been like, yeah. Like, that's too hard. That's too hard. Why have we decided to do this today?
I think it's because we both aligned on it. And I think in the past, 60% of the time or more, I've been the one who's like, forget it. I don't want to go do that. But this one, I think, will benefit from seeing it on a 35mm big screen projection with an audience. I think that will serve the experience in a way that I want to draw you into this movie. And so for me, it's like tactically,
Would you say that it's the best way someone could see this film for the first time?
I can't wrestle with what you're saying to me right now.
I've never seen
it. Stop it. What?
Yeah. Never seen it.
Wait.
I've never seen
it. Wait, this changes my whole life and not just this podcast.
I know. I didn't tell you this until
right
now.
That's... Wait. This doesn't work on a podcast, but I just stared at him in silence is what that silence was, you guys. You've never seen it.
No.
How?
I was sort of setting you up. I was sort of setting you up with our pre-recording conversation.
Yeah, you hoodwinked me.
Yeah.
You hoodwinked me.
I tricked you.
Well, by contrast, we need to talk more about this, but by contrast, it is my sister's favorite film. So this is, in fact, someone close to me. It is their favorite film.
Can I tell you why I've never seen it?
Yeah.
Or at least why I think I've never seen it.
That's stunning.
Yeah.
Guys, Kaylin Egan hasn't seen Labyrinth. It's because you're too busy watching like R-plus rated movies.
How do I say this in a way that is... That is why, I guess. But how do I say this in a way that isn't totally condescending?
You're gonna say it's too puerile for your young brain.
Not puerile, but it looked like a movie for dorks.
Yeah,
like big dorks. And I was like, why would I want to watch this of all things? And that unfair perhaps sense that I had was only reinforced when I got to college and everyone who was crazy about Labyrinth were dorks. Like,
what is the distinction for you between kids movies and dork movies?
I don't know. That adults are still salivating over it.
Okay, but when you chose not to see it, you must have been seven or something.
I didn't really choose them.
Your parents would have offered Labyrinth up to you as an option. It was on TV all the time. It was around.
They didn't offer it, and I didn't catch it.
That's weird to me.
Yeah.
But at a 7-year old Kaylin Egan phase, did you have a parsing between dork and kid?
Here's a weird thing. We'll take this in two parts. The child part is to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Tell me the truth.
I never was like a Jim Henson guy. I wasn't against him, but I watched Sesame Street. I didn't see any of like the Muppet Show when it was on.
Jim Henson was my part two of my question, so I'm happy you went to it. That surprises me.
Because I wasn't like a Fraggle Rock guy. I barely had seen Dark Crystal, if I'd ever seen. I don't even remember if I'd seen that before this last time I saw it. I think I had, but I don't remember if I had. It didn't make an impression. The idea of Jim Henson as an artist or even just like a reliable, good old guy, I didn't care.
Puppets?
No.
No puppets.
Sesame Street.
And Pee-wee, yeah.
Yeah.
I was about to say, that's
but that
the
felt
one.
Very different to me. A puppet world without people, as a child, I didn't care. I don't know why. And I'm not saying Labyrinth that like I was above it.
People, though.
No, I know. I'm just trying to get at it from this other angle. Why I perhaps didn't care about Labyrinth. I mean, the truth is I don't really have a great reason.
Well, there's a thing that this happens to people. And like this happened to me with Lord of the Rings, is that it was the book I'd never read, so I didn't read it. Is it part of that for you, where you're like, oh, I never saw Labyrinth, and I'm not going to?
Because yeah, I think that especially in my late teens and early 20s.
You loved that you hadn't seen it.
No, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to change that. Right. You know what I mean? Like when I saw sort of who it was who loved it, it felt, here's the thing. I was so 90s, man. Like I felt so 90s in my sensibility and the things I was interested in that this felt like 80s, and it felt like 80s fantasy in a way that I just wasn't attracted to. I mean, frankly, that might even be a better way to look at this. Forget about the Jim Henson thing, although that is all true, but even more so, like I didn't care about mages and wizards and magical
mages
beings.
And wizards.
Yeah. What do you call them? Merlins?
Merlins.
I didn't really care about
Merkins.
Merlins.
They call them Merkins. You weren't interested by David Bowie?
Nope. Not as a kid. Certainly not. And he looks like a glam girl. Like I remember thinking that on the cover. I was like, why would I see a movie about this weirdo? Like
there's
that's how I
so
thought.
So many movies that you did see. All of I'm sure I can find one movie that slots into each of the reasons you've objected to this, and maybe has it congealed around this thing.
I don't
want to
act like I was being violently against.
No,
this.
I don't think you were.
I was not objecting.
No, you
I just
passively
never did
didn't
it.
See it. I totally get that.
For as many fucking movies as I rented from the video store, I must have passed Labyrinth a billion times and been like, nah, every time. That's that indifferent feeling is how I must have felt every single
time.
This
episode got a lot more interesting to me. Here's what I was worried about, and here's now what I expect to happen. So, by way of contrast, this is the movie that was played most in my household. Hands down, objectively true. My sister...
this is that Willow thing. This is your family. This is your family's thing.
My family has a fantasy bent to it, for sure. But more than that, I'd say, this was my sister's Moana, or whatever. Like, this is the movie you'd put on when my sister was like, oh, I want to watch a movie. This is the VHS tape she would put on. She knew how to work it. From age 3 to age, I don't know, 20.
Right.
She'd say, let's go watch the Sarah movie. That's what she called it. She couldn't say the word Labyrinth. But Sarah is, I assume, the lead character's name because it's called the Sarah movie. Yeah. Put the Sarah movie on. And then it would just be on all the fucking time.
Yeah.
All the time in our house. And so I don't know that I've seen it start to finish a million times, but I've certainly seen sections of this over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Because, A, two things. One, my mom is a fantasy nerd, fantasy dork. She loved David Bowie, and she loved fantasy. And so, great, why wouldn't we watch this? And two, it was my sister latching onto it.
Yeah.
So that was my attraction to it. Now, fast forward a bunch of years. I knew Labyrinth. I wasn't a geek about it. I didn't talk about it. Like, I'm sorry, I sound defensive about being a dork, but I didn't talk a lot about it in college. I talked more about the movie Bloodsport.
I want to be clear. I sometimes feel like I fall into this pattern too often, and I'm more reflecting where I was at quite a long time ago. I would gladly watch Labyrinth at any time.
Gunning.
In fact, I think that we own it.
That's
because I think Eve likes it.
See, that's intentional.
And I think that
point.
She and Lily had watched it, and so somehow I just didn't watch it. At a certain point, I hadn't seen it, and I wasn't going to... It was like, it's like you in every other movie. Like, you just aren't going to go out of your way to see it, really.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, no, I'm not taking this as a curmudgeonly sort of
It was rejection. At a time, but not anymore.
Yeah. And then the movie became, like, just the thing that everyone knew, and I didn't have a particular affinity for it, honestly. I was like, yeah, my sister loves that movie. It's kind of how I would approach it. I think it's pretty fun. And I knew the plot, and I certainly could recite the David Bowie or the Jennifer Connelly speech that she gives. And I would do it, if it came up at parties or whatever, if it manifested itself. But all that is to say, this last Halloween, as I mentioned at the close of last episode,
right.
My girlfriend and I went, and I have two things that are interesting about this. We went dressed as the baby. The plot is, I'll let Kaylin do it on the back end, but it involves Jennifer Connelly going to rescue her baby brother from the Goblin King, who's played by David Bowie. And my girlfriend went as David Bowie, the Goblin King, Jareth, and I went as the baby, and I had a bald cap and a red and white striped onesie.
Disgusts me.
Gross.
This is horrible.
Not a good costume, but here's what's interesting. Every single person knew exactly who we were.
Hmm.
So that said something to me. I was like, oh, this movie's for sure known.
Can I also say something? That Yeah, it is known. And I think that as I'm sitting here listening, half listening to what you're saying and thinking
about myself. Let's be kind
on
this episode. Well, we're retreating back to form already so early in the podcast.
I was... I think that at the time, if I'm being really, if I'm trying to be really honest with myself, when I got to my teen years and young early 20s years, this struck me not just as a dork movie, which I was being sort of cavalier about. It was a movie that girl geeks loved. So I didn't really identify with the girl side, and I didn't really identify with the geek thing. And I think I was being sort of actively excluding that point of view from my life.
I have a part two of my previous statement, but is this one of the first female lead driven fantasy?
Well, I didn't know. I'll tell you, I barely even knew it was a female lead. Like, honestly, that isn't the thing. It was who liked it.
No, which, I'm wondering if that's why they liked it.
I don't know. I've never seen it. I didn't ask them. I didn't want to talk about it.
They don't talk to those female dorks.
I didn't want to talk to those girls. But they seem cool. But, and I'm setting myself up to say now, the thing that I am probably most excited about is that this seems to be embraced, at least in my life, by the story you're telling, mostly or largely a female audience. That yes. They have a real affinity for this film.
That is
very exciting to me.
It is the first movie I can think of with a strong female protagonist. And by the way,
does it have a female energy? Like, is like what is it? Because girls are not usually attracted to fantasy.
I would argue this, man. I want to get back to my previous thing.
There.
No. So I, as part of one of my jobs right now, I become immersed in the world of female led YA fantasy. So this is Divergent. This is Hunger Games. This is Red Queen. This is Alexander Bracken, Darkest Minds. Like, all of these have, it's basically Star Wars plot with a female young protagonist. So young girl discovers her powers, goes off, has an adventure. It's homogenous and they're all fine. And young female fans flock to it and they love it aggressively. I don't know. And they all remind me a little bit of Jennifer Connelly's character in that they're strong, headstrong women going solo against insurmountable odds. I don't know that movies offered that to young women before this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably a huge part of it, is that they're like, oh, someone who I can relate to. Here's a 15-year-old girl who has to go fight these incredible odds and has incredible adventures solo.
Yeah. I am ashamed to say that I suspect that some element of this is why I stayed away, like as a kid at least, or as a young adult. I don't think as a kid I would have gladly watched anything when I was a kid, and I just didn't. But after that, I don't think I was interested because I think that I was sort of rejecting a female angle.
What makes this movie, I think, especially interesting in that world is that in theory, on paper, it's a young woman entrusted with responsibility by her parents who has to go fight to this mystical kingdom beyond the Goblin City to go fight an old Goblin King. But it's played by David Bowie in an androgynous, weird, sort of ethereal, dreamlike fashion.
Are there songs?
Yeah, oh, tons of songs.
Weird.
And you know some.
No,
of them.
I don't.
You might. I bet you know. You'll recognize two of them.
No, I won't. I don't think I will.
All right, I'm gonna play some.
No, don't. I'll go see the movie, but I don't think.
Will you
I
be
will.
Honest later if you recognize?
Things? Sure, but okay. Where would I know it from?
Some of them got radio play, man. Like, they were around.
Not on my radio. Like,
would you know though? How would you know what it's from?
What do you mean?
If you didn't know it was from, if you hadn't seen Labyrinth and it was played on the radio, how would you know it was from Labyrinth?
I can't imagine it was played on the radio when I was listening to the radio.
All right, maybe.
Isn't this movie from like 1986 or something
like that? Yeah. I would say at least three of the songs are massively iconic songs that I would say go up to anyone our age and say a line from it, they will know the lines to this song.
God, I'm looking at this image of David Bowie right here. This is so unappealing to me. Like I have to say, even now, I want to see the movie. I'm very excited to, but this is terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the movie like this?
No.
Okay.
That looks like a shitty 80s magician.
Yeah, that's what I think of.
Yeah,
like
sure.
That kind of thing.
David Bowie is, whatever. I won't get in the minutia about this, but the guy who juggles those glass balls is a guy named Michael Motion, who's off camera doing this in reverse, and that's super
glass
cool.
Glass balls.
Yeah, glass balls. You'll see in the movie. Point two I was making in my introduction was this, is that when we dressed up for this for Halloween, I said, well, we should know some of the dances or something. We should choreograph a thing in case, you know, we'll be at this ball and it'll be so fun. And I said, oh, I know what we should do. There's a scene where these guys take their heads off and throw them around like basketballs. And that's the scene. There's choreography in that scene. And I went back to pull it up on YouTube and watch it. Two things happened. One, I did not remember the song or the scene, and it was terrible.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, shit. Okay, this is for a movie I'd seen 1,000 times. the scene I went to go find, which I remember the trappings of, I didn't remember the scene that well. It didn't look good. It wasn't funny. And the song was really bad.
Oh, boy.
And I thought, okay, hold on. So I had my own, this is last year. So yeah. I had to check in about that. I was like, I don't know if I remember this movie correctly.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to watch it.
So you have not seen it since then?
Oh, I haven't seen the full movie in 20 years.
Amazing.
But I saw it. It's one of those movies I saw so much and just sort of knew.
Great. So this cuts, I mean, for you, this is going to get right back to the core of our podcast. I mean, this is a movie that will perhaps set off certain nostalgic alarm bells or recognition bells. And you're going to have to be, you're challenging yourself with,
well, on some level. Well, what I expect is that on a certain level, I don't think I'll be able to extricate my nostalgia from the film. But seeing this as an adult for the first time without a child next to you probably doesn't. It doesn't seem like a great idea.
Well, that's part of the fun of going to this theater. I mean, I assume at the very least, even if there are no children, there might be. But we're going to the Egyptian in Hollywood, which is kind of it's a great theater, and they have great, you know, programs and stuff. But I imagine that this is actually, I don't think we'll stick around for it, but this is a double featured with Pan's Labyrinth.
It's a lazy double feature. Like, well, I don't know. Yeah, seriously. It was called Labyrinth. Fuck it. Double feature.
I think it's like part of their mazes.
Get out of here. The Maze Runner program. Trilogy followed by Labyrinth and Pan's Labyrinth.
And Inception. Yeah. But the people who are here are surely going to be the people I'm talking about who have loved it from their childhood. I mean, these people are going out of love. Nobody's going like me to be like, oh, I think I'll check out Labyrinth for the first time. Like, that's never going to happen. So I think that may help it. That may sort of at least tell me how other people are reading, which I sometimes find is hard on this show, especially something if I haven't seen it. Like, Purple Rain's a good example. I think I found my way into Purple Rain, but I've been having a couple of conversations with people since who sort of suggest that and you said this too, that the theater experience really tells you what it is and how people have digested it in a certain way.
I also want to resurrect something from our deleted Goonies episode that I referenced last time, which I think is going to be relevant here, I'm guessing, which is that children, I think the way kids' movies bother me now in a way, they didn't bother me as a child because there's no cause and effect when you're a child. You see a cool thing, the image stays with you, and you don't necessarily know what caused it or how it strings together. So plots aren't as interesting to you because the world doesn't have a plot when you're that age. There's no cause and effect. It's just things happen, right? And I think that Labyrinth, I suspect, will fall apart in some structural plot ways, but so many images have stuck with me from this film forever. Like, I could just rattle off iconic things that either scared me or haunted me or excited me or I thought were beautiful as a child. So I have that. And as a delivery device or repository of cool images and ideas, I think this movie is super cool. There's puzzles she has to solve, and there are adventures she has to go on and wild characters she meets. It's like that kind of movie.
Well, one thing we haven't even talked about yet is that we obviously did I'm looking at it right here. We did The Dark Crystal on this show, which, you know, came, what, a few years before this? A couple years before this?
Yeah, this movie's better than Dark Crystal.
Are you sure?
Nope.
And you actually saw Dark Crystal with an audience. And even then, you found that, like, deeply
deflating. I
would
put money
experience.
That it's better than Dark Crystal, though. Yeah. I would put...
At least it's got to be more active. Because what I was stunned about Dark Crystal is it's so fucking boring. Like, it's so... And so samey from moment to moment.
In fact, I promise you it's better than Dark Crystal. I mean, even that her adventure is... I have to go. It's Lord of the Rings. I have to go from A to B. You know where you're going. You know where she's going to end up. And then the final climactic scene with David Bowie is this Escher painting wonderland. That's fun. Like, right. Even that enough is that description's better than the Dark Crystal.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So I think it's cool. And that's also...
Do you think that they learned some lessons from Dark Crystal? I mean, I don't know.
No, I don't think that.
Okay.
I think the puppeteering is not especially amazing.
In this?
Yeah. I mean,
are they very Muppety?
No, okay. No. One of the characters, Ludo, is this massive hulking creature.
Okay,
that's not especially convincing, as I recall, and not especially puppety. I think it's just a guy in a suit, honestly. And then the other two characters are there's Hoggle, who's a guy in a suit. I'm almost positive. Yeah. And then there's this Sir Didymus guy who rides around on a dog, and he's a for sure puppet.
Yeah.
And he's funny, but it's just a puppet guy. It's not great puppeteering. It's fine. So it's not really even a puppet landscape in that
So
way.
I shouldn't think of this as like a puppet movie.
There's sections of puppet movie stuff, but it's not your main drivers. Like the guys whose heads come off and stuff I was talking about, that's all puppets. And then a lot of the goblins around David Bowie are all puppets. So that's like the puppet world is that part of the movie, like that geographic location, is full of funny puppets, but it's not like a driver. It's not Dark Crystal. It's not a fundamental driver of the film.
Okay. Well, I'm very eager to see it. I feel when we pulled it, I was very excited because I feel like it's long overdue for me. I am in a very different place in my life than I think I was when I rejected this movie.
I'm so amazed by this.
Yeah. What,
this has only happened one other time on our podcast when you pulled this shenanigan.
I think it's happened a couple times.
Where you're like, guess what?
I've
never seen this.
Yeah.
But it was something equally stunning. It was something like Rambo 2 or some weird thing. It wasn't that, but something like that.
I don't know. Yeah. It's rare, but it's, you know, hey, it happens to all of us. we aren't perfect. I'm not perfect, dude.
No, this is not even... I mean, you're perfect with a couple gaps.
So no more to say. For you, obviously, this will be a much more of a nostalgic investigation, although you've been down that road before, and so I assume you're ready for anything.
I would say also I've listened to this album twice as much as I've seen the movie, probably.
Huh.
Which is weird. Some good David Bowie tunes.
Okay.
And Jennifer Connelly, who I love, and we next saw in Career Opportunities, followed by The Rocketeer, I believe. I had a crush on Jennifer Connelly.
Who didn't?
We'll be back.
All right. Knock it off. Come on. Stop it. I'll say the words. No, I mustn't. I mustn't say. I wish.
Is he going to say it?
Say what?
Quiet. You shut up. Listen. She's going to say the words.
I can bear no longer. Goblin King, wherever you may be, take this child of mine far away from me.
That's not it. Excellent. That rubbish. It doesn't even start with I wish.
We have studiously avoided talking to each other since we saw the movie together last night and walked around Hollywood.
Last night was a weird night.
Yeah.
We were in Hollywood. We went to the theater, the Egyptian theater, and then we came out in Hollywood, and it was like
bustling,
like 9 or something, or like 9:30, and it is hot in LA, and it smelled gross,
and
it was sort of trashed up, like it was super gross and weird, and scary. There were guys with like who were on drugs.
They were having drugs.
They were having drugs, and they were sitting on the curb and like twitching and screaming and. And it was a scary scene, and I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, it was fun. We had a good time. We walked around looking for old silent film movie stars on the.
It was
the Hollywood
very. It was just totally surreal to find stars from the teens, you know, on this boulevard with drug addicts and weird trashy tourists. I don't mean that tourists are trashy, but like that the people who congregate here at 9:30 seemed
on a Sunday
explicitly trashy.
There also is a, if you haven't been to Hollywood in a while, there's a lot of people selling things.
Yeah,
that
it really was like post-apocalypse hell. Like it was like this is what would remain if it all collapsed.
Yeah, I thought it was lovely.
Anyway.
Anyway, all that is to say, we just avoided talking about the film, which is an awkward thing for two men to do who just seen a film together.
I didn't find it awkward.
I did. I wanted to ask you questions and say things. I was having not a transformative experience, but I had like a lot of thoughts about it that I was interested in, and I've been holding on to it until now.
I'm glad. I'm so glad that you have thoughts. Yeah, I want to describe a feeling that I love, like that. This show sometimes does where. You go into something with a certain expectation or maybe even like not really, but sort of a soft feeling of what something's going to be like. And then you are like thoroughly, so it's a shock and sort of one of the things I love, let me put it this way. I love more than anything, I think, being sort of startled by the aesthetics of something and discovering kind of a thematic depth and falling into that. And sort of being totally overwhelmed and surprised by it, and then coming out feeling like weirdly transformed by a vision or art or like an emotional experience you're just totally blindsided by. And what I'm really having a hard time with is like, what is it called when you have the exact opposite reaction to a movie that does that?
Uh-huh.
And I think the only word I have come up with, which I'll spend the rest of this podcast unpacking, is like, that movie is so annoying. It is so annoying.
You guys just fell prey to a classic Egan bait and switch. That's what he does. He tries to narratively bait you.
But I want, but I'm all serious about, I'm serious about all those things. And I'm struggling with the movie because it is all those things. And I also, I guess, hated it.
Let me tell you my reaction to it. And okay, then maybe this will prompt your reactions to it.
It's a complicated feeling.
Yeah. Well, I had not the same feeling, but something that tracks with your experience. Okay. So I hadn't seen this in 20 plus years in retrospect. I estimated 20 years, but that would have put me at like 18, and that's not, it was before that for sure.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a lot of the movie that I sort of vaguely remember, a lot I very specifically remember. And my experience of the film was that on paper, I should have really liked this movie. It's a bit of like a Wizard of Oz sort of kid, female-centric mashup with some, I would argue, very cool puppets and very cool moments and ideas that felt completely soulless and joyless to me. Mm. And I was trying to track why it felt so empty while watching it and then after watching it. And part of it, I think, is that the movie's about a labyrinth. This girl goes into a labyrinth, obviously, and she has a series of obstacles she has to overcome, but the obstacles are disconnected from each other. There's no sense of progress or narrative growth for her, really, aside from like the really clunky lines where she says, "I'm growing." And it could have gone on forever of a series of disconnected obstacles. And I would say most of the obstacles are kind of cool. Like, I think there's cool ideas and cool puppets. I think Kayla might disagree with that. But I thought the puppeteering was actually pretty good for the most part and fairly interesting.
Well, of course it is.
But I had to.
Of course it's pretty good. But the Dark, Jim Henson.
Yeah, the Dark Crystal, the puppets were great, but everything else was kind of terrible and slow.
Right.
This movie, I would argue, actually, I'm not going to argue that. I want to talk about it in relation to Dark Crystal because I have mixed feelings about that comparison at this point. But yeah. But I was just fighting to impose soul and heart into a thing that didn't seem to have it the whole time. And I wanted to make it have that beating heart of a film or a narrative that hooked me in and drew me somewhere. But I just couldn't find it. That was my experience. Huh.
I think it has a lot of it obviously contains a lot of somebody's soul and heart. Like, they poured
in the idea, not in the narrative, though, I think.
Oh, the narrative is a disaster. But it's so, like, that's obvious very early on. So, I mean, yes, you can say that. Of course, it applies to the film. But, like, you got to let, eventually, very quickly, I was like, all right, I'm just going to let this go. Because this story is never going to improve. It makes no sense. It's stupid. I'll just see what else the movie has to offer. And I don't think the movie was, like, going for that. But you have no choice but to sort of say, like, all right, forget tracking a story. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen ever. Nothing that is no incident is going to matter or be related to another. And so on that level, they thought they were doing Lewis Carroll, mm-hmm. but you don't even have the tether of an incident. Like, the even within the little moments and the little characters, there's nothing that makes any sense. And it's arbitrary what they will spend a lot of time on and what they will spend no time on. It's completely insane as far as all that goes. Like, the things that I liked best, just in terms of the sequences or the moments, they just kind of fly by. And then the things that I hated most in almost every circumstance will never end. They will never end. And I was
give
sort
me
of
an
like,
example of a thing that you hated that lasted forever.
Well, there's too many, but like
pick one.
One of them, since you talked about it before, is that god awful sequence where they're throwing their heads around. It is.
It's the worst thing in the movie, I thought.
I don't think it's the worst thing.
Really, I almost leaned over and I just wanted to emphasize in the moment. I'm like, imagine not having seen that movie for 20 plus years and then going online to find something and coming across that sequence.
Yeah.
Deep dread. Yeah. I was like, oh no, this is not what I remember. It's very, very bad.
But that's horrible on every level. Yeah. And so, like, it's not even, like, I guess it's cool that, I mean, you know how they, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just, it doesn't even look cool. It's not even fun
cool.
or interesting or intriguing
really
to look at. The song is horrible.
It's like a Calypso thing.
Yeah. And they're sort of doing, like, Trinidadian accents or something. Like, I don't, it's just, it's terrible. But not everything is terrible like that. But there are things I hated far worse. So, but, so all to say, I let all that shit go. I was like, I'll try to appreciate this aesthetically, even though what I discovered watching this movie, and maybe it's not fair because just the movie sucks, but I was like, you know, whatever enchantment people get about puppets, I don't have it. I don't have it.
Really?
That. Yeah.
I kind of do.
I really did not. So that's cool. I'd like to hear more from you about that because I was watching this being like, I'm not charmed by this or into it. Like, and it was weird seeing it in the theater because I felt and tried not to just project my own experience. I felt like the audience was like totally bewildered.
I heard a lot of forced laughs.
Forced laughter.
You felt like the same thing?
Well, we were right behind or in front of some those two dudes.
Listen, I am going to contest Kalen's dork theory a little bit, but these guys were for sure dorks. Like, I can't even argue the fact that they were not dorks.
I think that this audience was objectively full of dorks. And I said that a little bit sort of snidely and crassly at the beginning, intentionally, because I was trying to sort of make a point about how my application of that word toward people is unfair. It's fucking fair. Like, now that I've seen the people who come to this movie, it's like, yeah, those are dorks. Like, those are the people I was... I want to let myself a little bit off the hook because I was saying things that I thought would set up a different experience for me. And I was saying, like, I wasn't into this because it had a female-centric, you know, focus, like, or it was appealing to females. And I think that there's things in the movie that obviously would do that, and mm-hmm. I want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. But my movie radar is pretty right on. And I could tell this movie was not going to be for me or good. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is very strongly true. Like, it is not for me, and it is not good. Mm-hmm. But all that aside, I was really fighting with it because it was unique, at least. It is strange. And these are things that I usually get excited about, is something aesthetically unique, weird, dark, you know, exploring kind of bizarro childhood themes. And especially because it was about a girl who was 15 or 16, like kind of old.
Yeah.
It's a lot about sexuality.
Yeah.
A lot.
It's about coming of age. It's a coming of age story that doesn't ever manifest.
But emphasizing sexual, like, ideas. Yeah. Like, I thought that. And I thought mm-hmm. it was very strange. And mostly deeply uncomfortable.
The sequence where Jennifer Connelly is forgetting everything and she's taken into this sort of mystical ballroom thing with David Bowie, and it's
was the only part that was long and that I liked.
Okay, there. This is a on paper a thing that I sort of get or can get behind. The adult, quote unquote, adult world that she's thrown into has the trappings of the mystical realm she's been in, but it's crass and garish and scary and gross and sort of like cultish in a weird way. And she's done up and she's made up like a woman, I guess. And it's very sexualized between her and David Bowie in this moment. And I found it uncomfortable in a way that I really liked.
Yeah.
I thought like, oh, she's scared of growing up. Like this is like hitting the theme it's been trying to circle around for a little bit. And I found most of the movie on paper a journey and a story I could get behind. And that's why I was really struggling with why it never clicked into place for me. Does that make sense, like, when I say that?
Kind of. I like what it wants to be about, but I found it distressing and disturbing the way it chose to be about it, with the exception of that sequence, which I thought was cool and a good way to do this. But I don't know how to talk – I've thought a lot about this. I don't know how to talk about this without sort of – I'm afraid, I'll say, that I don't know how to talk about this without – seeming like super creepy.
Oh yeah.
Which is kind of how this is how I found the movie, is that it's concentration on, like, this is going to sound so weird to people who have not seen this recently or did not watch it with my eyes, but it felt like
it was everyone in the world
obsessed. It felt to me like the movie was obsessed with sex organs. Like,
well,
like there's a
famously.
Okay. Like, the gag is that David Bowie's
penis
dick is out, like, all the time, and, like,
that's for you,
you see
Joey.
The outline of it
constantly
all the time.
Yeah,
and there's like weird close-ups of it and stuff.
It's the thing that most people know about the movie or remember, like, oh, David Bowie's
but dick. Also, it bugged me that, like, one of the guys, the puppet's name is like Didymus, which sounds like epididymis, which sounds like the part of the balls that, like, and like that they're all dudes, and that one of the biggest challenges in the movie, the biggest sort of rites of passage, is going through a stink swamp, which has bubbling anuses.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, just
explicitly.
Sphincters. Yeah, it's sphincters. It's straight up
bubbling sphincters.
Yeah.
And that
gross.
It was the vilest thing I've seen in a long time. Yeah. And I was almost like, is this so gross I'm into it? Because I can't believe it's this gross.
I really wavered on that.
And that it is never ending.
Yeah, yeah, it goes on forever.
It goes on
and the audience, that's the biggest laughs the movie got in our audience, was there's a lot of fart. There's about 7 minutes of fart jokes in the audience.
Are they jokes? I couldn't tell.
Yeah, oh, they're constructed as jokes. Like, here's why they're jokes, is that Ludo walks across it with long, different, varied tonalities of farts. And then the dog runs across with, like, fast farts, and the audience, it killed. Like, they ate it
up. I didn't get it, because it, like, I don't want to say, like, this, it all felt obsessed with, like, being stuck with the disgusting bodily functions of sex, and applying that to this girl, and in a very male way.
Well, this is what I kept thinking. You said this on a previous podcast, and maybe it was Goonies, but you said it a number of times. I kept thinking, oh, this is an old guy's version of what a young girl must go through. And I kept sort of circling around that idea.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, on paper, this should work, that you're trying to tell a story about segueing into an adult world. And the, I mean, the parameters of the plot are there. She goes into, there's a new child in the family. She's feeling replaced by it. She goes off and plays make-believe all day by herself. She comes in, she's asked to babysit her little brother, and the parents go, well, I thought maybe you'd have a date. You should have a date by this age. And she's like, ugh. And she storms off in a very vague idea of what a girl would do. We can talk about that in a second. And then she comes in and finds that one of her stuffed animals is missing, and they've given it to the baby, and she's like, ugh. Okay, cool. Like, I get on paper why that works, but that is an old man's version of what that would be.
I don't. I still don't. And I don't understand what has me sort of reeling the most and trying to concentrate the most on, and maybe you can explain it to me, is what is this movie even saying about her journey? Like, what is it saying about a young woman at the age of 16?
Here's what I think the movie's saying. I think the movie is saying that she is clinging to childhood and fantasy at a time when her parents want her to grow up and give a responsibility for another human being. She fucks up that responsibility by asking the baby to be taken by the Goblin King. And then, again, this is theoretically not what happens in the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She has to go through a series of adventures where she finds that she is strong. She finds, and the key line of the movie is, you have no power over me, which I take to mean, you fantasy people have no power over me. I'm my own independent person. I can forge my own path in the world. And she does this. She conquers her inner demons. All these things were shown very early in the film are things she has in her room. So these are all, we see Hoggle, and we see Ludo, and we see the Goblin King on her desk, and it's all fantasy things that she's constructed, and she has to fight her own childhood to grow up, I think is what the movie's trying to tell us. And then at the end, the stinger of this plot is, she's like, sometimes I need you guys. And they're like, well, we're here. And so the idea the movie, I think, is trying to tell you is that you can grow up, but listen, you don't have to abandon your childhood in order to become a human being.
No, I know that. I know that. But So you're saying that the movie, here's what throws me about all that, which is all, that's very well stated and exactly right. I mean, it's kind of obvious that's what the movie is doing. Why does it set up her parents giving, sort of pushing that on her by saying you should be going on a date? And then why does it so obsessively sexualize her childhood world?
I think it's what she's scared of, is what the movie's saying. And the reason why her parents push that on her is obvious, is that the world is trying to make her grow up and she doesn't want to. And
the parents Goblin are the King world. Is not the outside world. Like, is just everything both? Is it just a swirl of fantasy and adult anxiety kind of all
I think so. Well, I think the parents are supposed to manifest what it is that she's afraid of. And her parents are saying, you should not be playing make-believe in the forest with your dog. You should be going on dates and growing up.
Right.
And she's like, I don't want to do that. And then the fantasy world is a confluence of the things that she finds interesting and the things she finds scary.
Right.
I'm not saying the movie does that. I'm saying that's what the movie wants to do.
Well, the movie kind of does do that.
But it tells you it's doing it, and it doesn't really do it, I would argue. And I think that I was able to follow the trappings of what the movie wanted to be constantly, I thought, and that's what made it so frustrating, that I couldn't lock into any sort of like connection to this character. There's no character there. It's a vapid idea of a character.
Well, yeah, she's a broad canvas to apply all this stuff to. But it, but I found, I guess, again, not to be, not to overemphasize this. So to answer an earlier question, my least favorite sequence was that stink swamp. And I just found it heinous to be in, so to speak.
What a gross pun.
I know. I don't like it. But why is that there? What is that about? Is it about like body odor? Is it like, what is it going, what is going on? Why is that this, the ultimate manifestation of horror in this movie, is that you could dip a toe in the stink swamp and then smell bad forever.
I'm not joking. I bet you that was the origin of the idea.
That's
bet you.
That's fucking so weird.
I bet you they were thinking through things that, like, kids are afraid of or are told to be afraid of.
And it's, you know what? It felt like they were trying to cut to the psychic core of anxieties.
Yeah.
And just missing.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that's exactly right. I think that they sat down and tried to make a modern sort of really metaphorical fairy tale,
right,
that's Wizard of Oz style, or, you know, Alice in Wonderland style, and just sort of didn't understand the core fundamental thing.
So
and got caught up with the joy and fun of gags and puppets and kind of lost the thread.
So here's my, really my question. And the thing, the saving grace this movie may have, and you are not the person to answer it, but
I'm the only one here.
Well, I know. So we're going to be, we're fucked, but I'm not going to put this all on her, but Tatiana loves this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Other it's women I've known love this movie. Mm-hmm. Is it accomplishing exactly that for certain girls? Like, does it do, does it hit, is this a bullseye for people?
I was thinking a lot about this particular thing, which is this movie good for me? In parts, yes. I would, there's parts I actually really enjoyed in the film, which I can talk about.
Yeah.
Is it, but I was thinking, okay, it's not really for me. Is it for kids? It, can a kid find something to hang their hat on in this film? And I think that the answer is, for the most part, well, there's two parts to that. One is it fun for kids? I would argue most of it is fun for kids. Two, is it sort of dangerous and gross for kids, was the other thought I was having. It might be kind of gross, and the messages it's saying for kids, is probably, they're probably not great.
But do you know what I'm asking? Like that's all interesting. I think that's true. It's like, I can see a kid liking this movie because, you know, kids are dumb. But, like,
whoa.
The things like, my favorite scene in the movie, by far, is when she falls down the pit and of hands.
I knew that was going to be your favorite.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because it's creative. And it's cool. Crazy cool looking. Yeah. It's disturbing in an interesting way. And on theme, it's a bunch, it's a girl's body being touched by a million hands. Like, so I get that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was sort of a key for me. Like, I was like, okay, I can try to extrapolate this, at least according to this one theory that I have, and see if it holds true. And the other things that it, that seemed to be trying to do that were more disturbing and confusing to me. But it made me think, like, there, if I understand that, and how it might apply to a girl coming of age and becoming an adult and the anxieties that she would feel about her body, then maybe the other ones are there are things I can't understand about becoming a woman. Just, I never will.
That feels true.
And so maybe these other things are having that same, you know, targeted, perfect effect on girls. Like, I don't know. Like,
I don't think that's true, but I am very convinced that was the impetus of almost all of the ideas. A woman has to learn to deal with flirtation and sexuality. A woman has to learn to be clever and creative and supportive. She has to learn how to have male friends. She has to, you know, there's all these things I get on the surface.
Right.
Like, I understand the beat, but they're not ordered in a way that makes sense. There's no sense of character or narrative progression. They're all just kind of like slam shot, you know, thrown together in a way that just doesn't really add up to her. And also, I would argue most of her performance is not very good, which was surprising to me.
Yeah.
There's parts I thought, well, she nailed that one part. But for the most part, it's a pretty flat performance.
I would call it terribly directed.
I agree with you. Almost all the time.
Not always, but almost all the time.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to let her off the hook. You know?
I would say anytime there's a human on screen, it's terribly directed. There's a couple moments I would say of like that one bit with the puppets was cool or whatever. But most of the human performances and actually camera angles and stuff were kind of dumb and not.
And the lighting isn't cool. Like let me segue into this, because here's all of that. Let's put it away. Like, we can keep talking about that stuff, but here's my real issue, and this is the puppet thing.
Mm-hmm.
I hated, hated every single puppet.
No.
I hated them.
I liked them.
I liked the puppets.
I liked them. Okay, wait, let's talk about the... Let's have a puppet. Before we get into puppets, do you want to just tell us the plot? Just so people have sure. it. And then we'll do puppets.
Well, we've done it. I mean, this girl, you know, is sort of living in a childhood fantasy, even though she's 16, which is very old.
15,
which is very, very old. Her parents are leaving on an evening. They say that they wouldn't have asked her to babysit if they thought she had anything better to do, and they beg her to have something better to do, and she's like storms off in this very bratty way. And then she wishes that her baby brother, who she's supposed to be taking care of, would be kidnapped by goblins. So he is. And then...
It's the way the world works, guys.
And then the Goblin King says, all right, you can have your baby brother if you can get to through the labyrinth to that castle in 13 hours. And from then on... Totally, completely, utterly arbitrary traps and puzzles. And
importantly,
obstacles.
This is the book she's been reading. She's living out the fantasy right. novel she's been reading.
We only know that because it's called Labyrinth. Like, we don't have any idea of what the story is.
Yeah.
Like, and so.
Well, kind of. I fought my way here to the castle beyond the Goblin City to take back the child that you've stolen. That's the first line of the film.
Sure.
So, like, we know it's the same plot.
I get it. But there is no plot.
Sure.
So they just go through a series of sort of random adventures with constant setbacks. And the Goblin King is in charge of all of this. And so it doesn't seem like she's ever making any actual progress because she's never beating him. And then finally she gets to the castle. They have this sort of weird exchange where he says that he wants to be her slave. He says that all I ask is that you fear and love
weird.
Me. And then I will be your slave. Which, again, like, I was like, do I want to unpack this? Like, do I want to try to spend the time to try to figure out what this is going for? Because I don't know. It seems like a complete mix-up. Anyway, she says, she realizes that he has no power over her. And he is very sad as he sort of turns to dust or something. And
he's
then,
slow motion sad.
And
that's
yeah.
how sad he is.
And then she returns to her reality. And it was all a fantasy, of course, duh. The movie tells you that from the first second. And then her parents come home and she said, like Travis says, she says, I might sometimes need you guys. And then they're all there partying in her bedroom.
Credits.
And then the owl, who is David Bowie, is like, hey, 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 and flies away.
Yeah. There's one sequence I'm like, they're trying to go for something here. So Hoggle, one of her compatriots, she assembles a team of three other people along the way, Wizard of Oz style. And one is overly brave and one is overly sort of dumb and one is a coward, right? And Hoggle is the inside man for the Goblin King. And he gives her this piece of fruit that's supposed to make her forget everything and forget what she's doing there.
The peach is sexualized. It's all
big time
weird.
And also whatever, we'll get to the peach because a worm comes out of it and it's highly suggestive and gross. But she forgets everything. And in the forgetting, this garbage lady, who I'm sure you guys remember, from the film, takes her back into her bedroom. And she says it was all a dream. And there's a sense that if she just stopped there, she could live in this sort of world. But then she decides to go outside. And then she's not out of that world. The garbage lady's there. And then she has to remember to go get her brother. And I was confused about the symbolism of that scene. It felt like it was circling an idea.
Well, you're
about
skipping Sean. The big... moment of symbolism in that scene, which is that the woman who's not garbage, it's like a junk lady,
oh, the dolls,
she starts
and stuff.
Piling her childhood items onto her body,
right,
making her hold them and stacking them up on her. And the idea is you will eventually become a crone, an old unsexual crone, yeah, right, holding your childhood world around you.
Yeah, is this what you want?
And then she goes like, this is all just stuff or whatever, right, and then breaks the wall. Like, it's really weird.
Okay. Yeah, so that's the plot of the film. All right, so puppets.
Yeah.
I thought they were super fun, man. I really thought they were cool. And the reason I would argue, and I think there's a valid argument to be made that Dark Crystal is maybe a better film than this. I liked this film better than Dark Crystal personally because I got joy out of some of the puppet sequences. I
Which ones did you like?
I thought the Goblin King sequences with all of, like, the funny little puppets that I'm sure you thought was dumb. I thought it was fun. I thought it was really cool and interesting. And, like, I like dumb accents on puppets. I think it's funny. I like it. Caelan's giving me the most disappointed, like, disbelieving look right now. But I did. I found joy in that. Mm-hmm. I found joy in Hoggle's weird face. I thought that was a cool-looking puppet. I thought Ludo is fine. I think Sir Didymus is 40% funny. And then the other 60% tipped too far for me. But, like, there's parts of that I was like, that's a kind of a funny idea. I thought some of the sequence of the Goblin City, which is very poorly choreographed, makes no sense. You can't wrap your head around it. But there's moments of, like, funny ideas in there. There's there's funny characters. The little worm character at the beginning I thought was endearing and fun. I thought the guy with the bird on his head was fine and interesting and funny. Like, I thought all that stuff, and I thought it looked good.
I asked Eve what she remembered last night, and she said that, you know, one thing that she remembered liking, although this is not a film that really stuck with her, despite the fact that we own it.
You do own it.
Somewhere, okay. Yeah. She said she really liked the part where she was putting lipstick on the stones, yep. And then little puppets would pop up and fuck up the stones. And I liked the lipstick on the stones. I hated those puppets coming up and changing.
Wait, why did you hate it?
I don't know. It was just like,
I'm really confused. I was just about, like, what
give
you
me
hate
anything. Give me anything in this thing that makes, that holds together, that makes sense. And I know that that's like, you could say that about Alice in Wonderland or whatever, like, and that kind of arbitrary, she keeps saying it's unfair. And I mostly, as much as I like some of these ideas, I found it overwhelmingly obnoxious.
We can agree on most of that.
At all times.
I think I kept coming back to the idea here is fine. The execution is not is and not, I would argue, not always bad, just sort of joyless.
There's
like, I was like, I get what they're doing. Okay.
What I haven't said here, but what I'm hoping to try to communicate, and now I'll just say it, is like, there's a 1% chance this movie is, I think this movie is amazing. Like, there's a 1 out of 100 chance that I think, if I could see it right, if I could fucking bring these things into focus for myself, not just intellectually, but emotionally, if I can just make this work, there may be something so brilliant that I'm suddenly, I need to, like, I have to go revisit. Like, I've had experiences with a movie where I was watching it with this level of dislike and loathing, and then something happens, sometimes at the end, where everything changes and I can reassemble the entire film in my head and love it.
That happened to me with the musical Blood Brothers. I hated it until the last 10 minutes. Then now it's one of my favorites. It was weird. It was just
crazy.
It just hit me. I was like, oh, I was seeing this.
That happened to me with Ichi the Killer.
Okay. So there you go.
Takeshi Miike's movie, Ichi the Killer. And I kept thinking, like, maybe this isn't Ichi the Killer, because it's similarly obnoxious. It's similarly, like, distasteful, ugly to me aesthetically. Loaded with kind of vague metaphor that I can't quite get. And then there's a thing that happens in that movie that I won't go into because, like, why would I? But where it all suddenly went, like, zoom, and it, like, I felt the whole film fall into place. And I was like, fuck, like, this is an incredible experience. And there's something about Labyrinth that makes me want to have that. Yeah. And it's the fact that I can't, I feel ungrounded. Like, I don't have this experience with movies.
I sort of don't understand why. I mean, there's nothing intellectual to say here about this, but I did enjoy a lot of the puppet sequences. Like, on a fundamental level, I wasn't forcing it. I did factually, in my heart, enjoy
it. I think that will always be the most major stumbling block for this movie for me. I mean, I'll never watch it again, I think, because I can't stand them.
Like, okay, so at the beginning, and this is not a laugh-out-loud funny thing, but I was like, I get why a kid would think this is so fucking funny. When she's cursing out her baby brother, and the way it introduces a mystical realm is it just cuts to a bunch of goblins sitting there being like, hey, guys, like, wake up. She's about to say the magic words. And they're like, what? And it's a bunch of weirdly accented, the frame is full of like 15 goblins. And they all have their own personalities. There's a smart one, there's a dumb one, there's the, you know, foreign one, I guess, or whatever. And they're waiting for, it keeps cutting back, where she almost says the magic phrase. I thought that was fun and cool. I thought that was an interesting way of developing the alternate world.
But
and I saw how a kid would think that was
all,
so cool.
For professional filmmakers, why would you do that scene and not, she says some word. Like, here's the movie's idea of a joke.
Yeah.
And it's just I can't say this any other way. It's not my idea of a joke.
Like, I think it goes, thinking of jokes is the wrong way to think about it, but go on.
But they try... Like, yes, here's what happens. Okay. Here's what happens. I won't set it up as a joke. Here's what happens. Mm-hmm. So she is saying, like, you know, I wish the goblins... And they're like, she's going to say the words. She's going to say the words. And she goes, like, I want the... it would be great if the goblins came and took the baby. She says that, and it then cuts back to, and these goblins this whole time have been like, she's going to say it. We're going to get to take the baby. And then she says that, and they go, huh? Like, why can't she say it right? And then they say what she's supposed to say, and then she says it. Like, it's so surreal and so weird she says the
That's
thing.
Not the joke, though. The joke is that we're supposed to wait for the a mystical incantation.
And, which we don't know what it is.
Right, I would argue kids are primed for fantastical incantations. And because she's been reading the book, and the movie opens with an incantation, false speech type of thing. And it goes to the goblins, and they go, oh, why didn't she say the right phrase? And someone goes, what's the phrase? And the phrase is, I wish the goblins would come take the baby. That's it. And that's the joke. The joke is it's all she has to do is just ask them to take the baby.
But she does. She just does it with different words.
And then she, well, kind of.
And then they're
of.
Like, what's wrong with her? Why can't she just say it? And yeah, then she but says, but that's like, the she joke. Has to say, I wish.
Yeah.
But, and then she does. But it's
that's the joke, though. The joke is it's a plebeian
It is
phrase.
Such a terribly set up joke.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying joke is the wrong way to think about this. To me, the way to think about those sequences is general delight. Like, I didn't have any laugh lines, but I had moments of enjoyment. Like, when they're shooting the cannons shoot these little, like, balls out of them or whatever that have spikes on them, and they stick in the walls, and then a little bird head comes out and is like, did I hit anything? Like, that. Like that's not a joke. That's just part of a general enjoyment where you go, yeah, that doesn't bug me. Like, that's fun and whatever. And I didn't laugh out loud.
Yeah.
But a lot of the movie has that for me of, like, thing, general like, enjoyment.
This is like my fucking, what's that thing that people can't eat because it tastes like soap?
Oh, cilantro.
Cilantro. This movie's my cilantro. Like, I just, the puppets are my cilantro. I just don't feel it. I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't feel it, at least in this movie. I mean, I like the Muppets because I like those characters and I like seeing them tell dumb jokes. Like, but they seem built on a concept. These just seem like it's funny when a puppet sticks his head out and is like, what was that? Like, that's all it is. They don't have any coherence. They're just like, it's funny when a puppet does this thing, says this dumb line,
well, the Muppets,
which is very bland.
Yeah, but the Muppets, I would argue, traffic more in actual jokes. There's like setup and punchlines.
I know,
Muppet
but do
world.
You know what I'm saying? Like, let's call them gags.
Okay.
The idea of a puppet gag is something familiar, and it's what Travis describes. It's like something happens, and then a puppet's like, what the hell? Like, what was that? Like, here, hey, I'm right over here. Like,
I
it's
hate
that
this
kind of
voice.
Thing. That's what the whole goddamn movie's like. So every single puppet has the same kind of gag, which is like, huh? Wow. I didn't say that. Like, it's like the worst. There aren't joke lines. They're just, it's a puppet saying a thing.
Like, and I think that's cool.
I don't.
I think it's fun.
I totally don't.
Let me
like,
ask you.
I so don't that yeah. I'm shocked.
I don't get it because I really think it's fun. Like, fundamentally, I think it's fun. And the movie disappointed me and the movie felt empty. But I enjoyed myself a lot of the film on a fundamental, I would argue, non-nostalgic level. Yeah. Although 80% of my enjoyment was, oh, I remember this.
Well, cool. This I'll totally give you. I'm not going to argue that puppets are bad. I can sort of totally see, like, that's why I said.
I can't
like,
believe we're to the point
that's
of,
why I said,
are puppets bad?
No, they're not. Of course they're not. But I have, like, discovered a distaste in myself.
Yeah,
where I'm
fair.
Like,
I mean,
hate.
Look, that's
it
cool.
Also, can I say the other thing that this movie kind of reminded me of is Time Bandits. I think that, like, Time Bandits is a thing that as a kid I struggled with because it's so abrasive and so loud and crazy. And, like, we've talked about this with Gilliam before where he's, like, he's just so in your face with these broad, loud, ugly, sort of muted colored images that are, you know, horses crashing through closets, like, you know, dwarves running around, falling down. Like, it's the same kind of thing. But as I've grown older, that has, I've sort of, that's a taste I like. Like, I can get with that. I have a palate for it. And I was watching this being like, this is kind of how I felt when I watched Gilliam as a younger kid. Mm-hmm. When I watched Time Bandits, because I was like, ah, too much, like, gross, freaking me out. And I felt like that now. And so I don't think I'll ever get over this puppet thing where I can get over that.
I mean, this is, there's a couple things I want to talk about here. Let's talk about this one bit. I'm torn about two things I want to talk about here. Let's talk about the bit first. There's the famous song in the film, the big sort of one you guys probably know, where all the goblins are dancing around and David Bowie's there and he's dressed, in Caitlin's defense, super weird, kind of weirder than you guys remember, if I'm being honest. It was kind of disturbing. And even though you know David Bowie's dick is like a highlight of the film, it's kind of worse than you remember. And I like that's the joke about the movie. It's worse than you think. I thought that scene was fun. I thought it was so fun. And there's not any laughs in it, but I remember thinking, I totally get how a kid would latch on to this and have fun. Because the song, I would argue, is a good song. That's a good song, I think.
What?
Yeah, I think that song is a good song. And I will state that unequivocally. Dance Magic Dance, I think, is a good, fun song, especially for a kid.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Here's my problem with that song. Yeah. I can't even hear it because the movie is assaulting my eardrums with puppet voices. Like, I can't even hear
What's wrong with puppet voices?
Because I can't even hear the tune. I don't even know what I'm listening to. It sounds just like loud, weird, bad, convoluted noise.
I don't fundamentally understand.
That's
you.
Truly how I felt watching it. I was like, "What is?"
In a
this?
Second, I want to play part of that song on the Great. Podcast. But this leads to my other point I was wrestling with earlier, which is, I think most of these things, I don't want to call them bits or whatever, but most of these characters or fragmented things are intensely memorable for children, and I don't know why. But and I'm the wrong person to sort of levy this point because I admitted to seeing these bits over and over and over again as a kid. But I think so many people like this film because they remember the highlights and not the shadows of the film. They remember the bits, and something about these images stay with you. Something about the door knockers and the this guy always lies, this guy's always told his truth. Something about Ludo, something about Hoggle, something about the Goblin King. Like, these things stick with you as a child. They're memorable images. And that's got to be something the movie's doing right, ? Like, this, people latch on to these visions.
Yeah. No, I totally. And he, Jim Henson is no slouch in this department. Like, he obviously knows on some level what appeals to a child's mind, you know, and plays to it. But it is not my mind.
You know what really was interesting to me?
Yeah.
Is I just watched the Mr. Rogers documentary, and I was so taken by how well he seemed to understand the kid's mind. Mm. And there's a, you haven't seen it yet, I think, but there's a moment where he goes, there's this, he details an experience between the child and him. Well, the child says, hey, I remember what it was actually. He goes into a room full of children, and one of the children goes, oh, out of nowhere, apropos of nothing, my doll's ear fell off in the washing machine. And then the room is silent, waiting to see what he's going to say. And I'm like leaning forward in my seat because this is the moment the movie's trying to tell you this guy understands kids.
Uh-huh.
And he gives the perfect answer. And you go, oh, fuck, you get kids. Like, I wouldn't have come up with that answer.
Do you know what he says?
I do, but I don't want to spoil it for you. And if
I want to know. It's on the show. We should say it on here.
On the show?
We're talking on the show. It's to set that up and then not give the answer.
he says some version of, yeah, that happens sometimes. Sometimes we are our stuffed animals and our pet, our stuffed animals, their ears fall off and their arms fall off in the wash and they get tattered and ruined. But our arms don't fall off and our ears don't fall off.
Oh.
And the kid, he says, the kid's eyes get wide. He leans forward in his seat. He goes, that doesn't happen to humans. That just happens to our stuffed animals. And do you see? And all the kids were like, yes, that's what I wanted to hear from you.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I was watching that going, oh, you fucking get it. I couldn't shake the feeling watching this movie that these guys don't really understand kids in the way that's like a deep way, but they understand visual images for kids. Mm-hmm. Like, the plot is not for kids, and the story is not for kids, and the connective tissue is not for kids, and the characters really aren't for kids. Mm-hmm. But the visuals and the gags, I think, kind of are for kids.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that they were going for something that they thought would be primal, and they would pair that with what they know about puppets as the sugar that sort of delivers this this primal psychological experience that all kids are going to relate to, or like preteen girls are going to relate to. I just don't. I can't be the one who says, but at least to me, it did not ring right.
I would watch this movie again. I don't hate this movie. I liked a lot of parts of it. I found them pleasurable. I didn't do a great job of separating nostalgia from current stuff, except for the fact that I really felt in my gut the emptiness and sort of vapidity of the storytelling this time. I never felt that with this movie before, but I was worried about that.
I just thought of this right now. It's the Hug-A-Bunch. It's almost as fucked up to me as the Hug-A-Bunch. It's the same idea, a little girl going into a nonsense world and meeting sort of disturbing ideas and then being returned to normalcy, but with a completely destabilized feeling.
I mean, it's Hug-A-Bunch in that it pulls from the same... Well,
but I found it almost as unsuccessful and disorienting.
I don't know that Hug-A-Bunch is, you guys remember, if you haven't listened to that episode, please go back. It's deeply scarring to me. And we watched them around the same time, actually, as Labyrinth.
And also your sister loved it.
Yeah. Well, we all thought we loved it until it terrified us and we had nightmares about it. I think they pull from the same well is what I would say about that. But I would also say that this movie, to me, it's not fully underbaked. The plot, characters, sort of movie parts of it are underbaked. I think there's amazing care and attention and creativity put into the puppets.
Yes.
And I just kept thinking, man, if you would have taken 10% of that energy and put it over here, worked through the script. Terry Jones wrote the script. We didn't talk about that.
You know what I looked up? This is the only thing I've read about this, is that the script, yes, credited to Terry Jones, who did write a draft.
That's cool.
A draft.
Oh.
And then Henson took over. Then George Lucas took over. Then they hired someone else. Then they hired Elaine May to polish it. They had Terry Jones coming in and out. Yes.
Elaine May worked on this? Well, there should be better gags.
There should be better everything. And so it's this weird mishmash of various ideas and instincts.
Did you say mishmash or mishmash?
Mishmash.
I think it's mishmash.
Well, I just said mishmash.
You're the labyrinth of speaking.
It's a hodgepodge of hodgepodge of ideas and instincts. And so, you know, I thought that was fascinating because Terry Jones is like, what I wrote doesn't really resemble that movie.
That's so interesting because to me, what the script does, it feels like someone gave up and said, just signpost the beats with some lines so the audience knows where they're at and fuck it. Like, that's what it felt like to me, because it just tells you where she's supposed to be at. You're my friend. He's like, I've never had a friend. Like, okay, fuck you. Like, whatever. Like, I get it. Yeah. They just kind of gave up on the script and said, just signpost it and let's have some fun gags. But I would argue the converse, which is that so much attention and fun and creativity is put into every ounce, except for the head throwing scene, of the puppet scenes. The backgrounds are cool. There's stuff happening.
But why are they not? I know we said this earlier. Why are they not better directed? Why is this not a better movie? I don't know
why it's not better directed.
Because like that Goblin Town sequence is like, it's shocking.
It should be amazing.
It should be. Yeah. It's a set I found myself longing to visit. I wanted to be there very badly. And so it's not everything about this aesthetically is offensive to me. I liked the magic feeling of running down that first corridor in the maze. I loved that hand tunnel. I liked that city. There's a lot of stuff in there that I was like, I really like this. It's that sequence and much of the film is just so horridly staged and shot. Yeah. And maybe this is the limitations of how puppets work. Like, they just couldn't shoot it any other way because it's so complicated. But it is god awful in its assembly.
Yeah.
This
is a point I will gleefully concede to you, is that the staging and execution of the shots of the puppets, it's not great. But I think the actual puppets look awesome, and they look cool, and they're fun to hang out with. And that's something I would revisit. If I did watch this movie again, I would watch it in bits and pieces. I think that's the right way to watch this movie. I think watching it start to finish is kind of a recipe for disaster. But I really do like the individual constituent elements of the film in a way that like is pleasurable. Like I enjoyed watching the movie last night. Like I had a fun, fine time. I wish the dorks behind us would have shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
They were giggling and they talked about David Bowie's dick for an hour film.
Oh,
and it was so frustrating.
Yeah. I did not like the movie. I think it sucks.
One of our first like,
but I would be
strong,
but I would be very excited to hear somebody convince me otherwise, and I mean that sincerely. I would love it.
I'm sorry,
I really
have failed
it.
You on that.
Well, I think I would need somebody who felt more emotionally attached to it. Like I would, you know, somebody who really loves.
I firmly see the flaws in the film, but I also see things I really enjoy and love about the film.
Yeah.
All right.
It's your turn, dude.
Thanks, man. I'm going to pull into our
Go way in there.
I'm going to go in there. We didn't even talk about the peach.
Think about it.
Yeah, you got it. This is our newly curated cold bag. Can you see it?
No.
Okay. Pump up the volume.
Okay.
Join us.
Bye.